does the washing, he'll go and wash dishes, and we don't look on it as something a man shouldn't be doing. I mean, and he's also, when he's not working and I'm working, and one of our babies, he potty trained three of them, I think. So this is, you know, he really actually has more patience with the children than I do. But I think our men have really, those who do. And I go to the seniors meetings, or I used to. I haven't gone in the last year or two because of going to school. But before that, I used to go to seniors meeting, and, you know, men get right in there and wash dishes, clear tables off, and cook. They're not afraid to do anything. And they're not afraid to be... it comes in handy. You have to, these kids have to know. And my son, my youngest son, he's 19 now. He says he's going to be a bachelor. All right, then you have to learn how to look after yourself. And the other, the last two got off real easy, you know, because they had three teenagers when they were just little, three older ones. But the first three, as soon as they can, they've got the responsibility to make lunches, the younger ones, cook, anything that needs to be done. In those days, we had a wood stove, and ashes had to be emptied. Wood had to be split. Wood had to be brought in. Water had to be carried. Well, in fact, we just quit carrying water when we moved in here. We've been in here 3 years.
Elda, can we go back to some of your craft work? You're in a lot of different crafts. What do you think are the most important? What's most important in learning crafts? Why is it important to keep that as a part of Native life?
Well, many of the things that I do, which give me pleasure, I like doing. I do it because I like doing it. And there's such a wide variety of things to be done. And I don't know, I guess it's just a way to... let me think this over. You want to turn that off for a minute?
Sure.
And the things that happened, and ministers were involved in the churches.
The reason why I asked you was because I thought if you were that you could sort of give us an idea as to I know how it is.
Yeah. No, I never went there. I'm just lucky. Like my father in franchising, like before I was born, we worked, and it was only reserve kids that went.
What was the purpose of your father in franchising?
Well, I couldn't tell you for sure, because I have a theory about it, but I'm not sure that's what he done it for.
Do you feel like you're benefiting living on the reserve, or do you feel that you would benefit more out or off the reserve?
I think I benefit from living on reserve because it's like coming home. I mean, I've been around here so long now. It's like coming home, isn't it? I don't know whether I feel any different if I lived in London. Home is wherever you live, really. But it's quiet here, and you don't have to bustle and hustle of downtown living, sort of. No. And it's absolutely two different worlds. Like my going to school, coming home, is so much different than going to school. The difference between the safety of home or the safety of a school where other people are learning, you're not as liable to get discriminated against, between that and home and out on the street, sort of. Where people don't know what you're doing and they couldn't care less what you do, but you're being discriminated because you're an Indian.
Do you find that your children are think that your children would live on the reserve or off the reserve when they're totally finished their education?
Most of the three children that are married are living on the reserves that they married on to. Like the two girls, one girl's in Parry Island, and the other girl is in Saskatchewan, which is in the James Bay area, and my son lives here. So, and they have at times lived in town, but I don't know whether they would, whether they feel any different about living in town or off, or on reserve, I've thought of.
You talk, part of what is off of the tape is when you were talking about the sesquicentennial celebration, that committee that you're on.
Yeah.
That you had said what some of the things are for the celebration that you thought were important to have included, and it had to do with the outfits. That's part.
Yeah,
that's
definitely
missing.
definitely the Indian dress is going to be very important. The idea that they landed in Port Stanley, some of them, I wouldn't even say a majority, but a third of the people at least landed in Port Stanley. And hopefully they will reenact that in about the time, like the end of October, sometime towards the end of October. And what they wanted to do was have it coincide with the fair, but I don't think that's right, because this should be a celebration by itself and not include the fair, because the fair isn't as old as, it's not 150 years old. I think about moving back to the original Oneida Territories in New York State. I would like to be, if they ever went back as a group, to go back there and live, I would like to be part of that group. We went through Allegheny one time, and the lady who is a Muncie, and she said, and while we were driving through, we went across the Susquehanna River, and she said, this is the area our people used to live in. I have never been to Oneida, New York, and I just had a strange feeling as it was all hills and hills and hills and trees, and it was beautiful out there, and I would love to live out there someday.
Sounds like it's calling you back.
Yeah.
You know, because,
and yet I've never been there.
It's the same with me. When I left residential school, I found that I didn't have no peace of mind until I went back to the reserve, where I remembered what my grandmother's teachings were, and it almost drove me crazy till I went back. It sort of settled parts of me, but still, I'm still saying I want to go back. And like, I keep telling my mom, I'm going back to the reserve to live, and she keeps saying, well, why do you want to go back? There's nothing there. It's all hard life. I said, well, maybe because I grew up in that hard life, and that I'm not used to the way things are. Even out in the city, it's so easy to get mixed up into a lot of things.
Yeah.
That a lot of times when you look back on the reserve, you don't see all of those things. Everything is sort of like you've got blinders on your eyes, and like I remember carrying water and washing clothes by a scrub board.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when my mom or my grandmother used to make the lye soap.
Yeah.
And the,
my mother did too.
Cold medicine out of sumac, and you know, all the different things. And that keeps coming back to me every so often. I keep feeling that. It's driving me back to the zoo. And probably that's how you feel when you say you want to go back and you want to go to the United States, because it does. It's like a pounding in your heart, or it's like a drum, and it's like the beating that keeps, I guess you could say, haunting you to come back.
That's a part of the states that we travel through a lot. It's near where my husband lives.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent some time there, and it is beautiful. It is beautiful land. Amazing how unsettled it still is.
I would feel like almost like I would think pioneers might have felt. I imagine a great number of people going, you know, and settling, and what a hustle and bustle that's going to be till everybody gets their homes built. And it would be like reliving coming here, and I wasn't there to see that either.
Yeah.
because they were actually really kicked out of New York State.
But Oneidas bought the land here.
Right? Here, yeah.
Yeah.
But the original group that left, they went to Wisconsin, see. And this group decided to stay here.
I know who you're talking. There's a woman that I met at the...
And their population is really high over there compared to here. Although we've tripled ours.
At the Elders Conference?
More than tripled our population here from the time they come. There was only 300 and something, now there's 2,500.
They came over a period of years, though. I mean, they didn't
yeah,
come
yeah, that's right.
Time.
This
was
is
it
why.
30, 40 years that they came?
Yeah, the first group come in the fall, and the following group come in the spring, and then there, I think there was two other groups,
mm-hmm.
and there were probably maybe a couple families at a time coming over too. So it really kind of hard to pinpoint how many people actually accept that. There was over 300 in that first group, or 200 and something in another group. And it had to work very fast to house people by the time the first snow fell. So I would think it would be about between the 17th and October, around in that area, and a second group come in April.
There's a woman in Windsor that's talking, her name is Twyla, and she's from that area.
Yeah.
That you're talking
about. Well, they had an area here too, see, some I don't know how many acres there were. But they stayed a little while and didn't like it here, so they went on to Wisconsin. We have some of the names too, you know, here that they have in Wisconsin, so, you know, probably there's a lot of relatives from if they only knew there. Went back in there.
It took a lot of time to go back, and I mean, this is really way back far that you would find that. Well, the majority of the Indians come from the States.
Yeah.
The Ojibwe's, and what is it in the States?
Potawatomi's come. Odawa, okay.
Actually, it's all Potawatomi.
And they're all being pushed off their areas. Pushed on the areas like the wild animals, you might say, the frontiers of the wild animal. And now they've run out of frontier, really, except the north end and straight up. And they're interfering with that, which I think is very wrong. I mean, people were put here in this country too, and they were supposed to look after the land and what is happening to it. They've allowed it, but how can they stop it? They are ruining. And they don't even realize. I mean, they're doing it for the money, but they don't realize when the time comes and there's nothing left, they're going to be just as hurt as the rest of us.
Yeah. Well, the way I look at it, that even if the Indians get the self-government that they want, self-government means that they're not going to have, they'll have the reserve land, but it's not going to be protected. And that eventually that land's going to be taken again.
Well, this is exactly what happened in Wisconsin, because they didn't have the Indian Act to protect them. And each individual would sell land. And they were given land according to how many members were in a family, and so much for each person. And when they sold individually, their reserve is like a checkerboard reserve. You know, there's Indian living here, and next door neighbor is a white person. And a lot of it was, one man and his wife went to town, and these two white guys took him in the hotel, and they got him drinking. And when she left him, she was going to do shopping. When they met up again, he says, "We have nothing left. We have no home to go back to." He had sold it.
Same things happened in Alaska.
Yeah.
The United States, because they haven't had the protection either. And the reserves up there, it was supposed to be under giving them more independence, but what they did was the same thing. And they took so much land and mineral rights away from
them.
That's
what scares me the most, because I know that that's going to happen. young, my grandmother would tell me about the sky and about the, she never knew what they were called. She'd just say that the birds in the sky were going to damage the air. And she said that one day that people were going to damage even further beyond that.
They have gone beyond.
And she told me that the one day there won't be any grass on the ground. There's going to be all these people and there will be nothing to feed them or nothing because nobody cares about it. And there's nothing to look after it. And that's funny because my grandmother isn't that old. But it was just that she was told that.
It's a prophecy
down.
That passed down the generation. But those prophecies are being lived now, most of the prophecies that they had. And these prophecies come way before white contact. That's how far back they go. I've heard the people talk about the strong ones, the big animals. So they've been around a long time. Talk about the strong ones.
It's like we were put down. I feel that at times I think that Native people were put down on the earth to protect the land and all that lives in it.
They were supposed to have, yes.
And if we're being mistreated and we can't protect that land is going to vanish in the end. And that's how I feel. That's what's happening now. Because we're not really actually being protected. The only thing that we got that's good out of all of this is the reserve. Your home is always
they want to get rid of that.
But once it goes, once the self-government comes in, it's gone.
Well, I certainly don't feel that people are ready for self-government unless they learn something other than what Indian Affairs have taught them.
Mm-hmm. What my husband says is they got to do away with welfare, they got to do away with mother's allowance, they got to start going out on their own. If they want self-government, that's showing what you want.
Well, this is what's wrong with self-government, because it's not flexible, see? Mm-hmm. Like, on your reserve, it might be different than here on reserve. Or it might be different in another reserve, in another province. But what's going to happen is that those who are ready for self-government are going to get what they want, and the rest of it is going to be forced into it. Mm-hmm. Just like the elective system. They didn't want that elective system that bad. It didn't take them long to realize it wasn't any good, but it was too late. It was done illegally here.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same with the status and the non-status. If you look at it that way, you're looking at nobody had the right. The government was the one that first done the non-status bit.
Yeah.
It wasn't the Indian people. The Indian people never believed in throwing out their own kind of people just because they married off the reserve. As a matter of fact, they take them in.
Into marriage,
they look after them. Just like they were their own. And today, because of the government, it always comes down to the government. Everything. Whatever you do, it comes down to the government. Even if you're doing beadwork, it costs money. In order to get money, you have to get a job in order to get those materials. That's how the government interferes with everything that a person does. It always comes down to money.
And a lot of people don't understand that.
I know.
I mean, how many people, well, I was just listening to the TV this morning and they had a white guy on there who was making $184 a week. He was getting less by working than if he had got welfare. And he had been off welfare for 6 months. And they had done this taping with him at that time when he got a job and now. But since they've done the taping, he's living with a common law woman and they got a little girl or a child anyway. They decided to break up. I mean, I imagine that woman is now getting mother's allowance, and with his wages, they can make it do. Yeah. Otherwise, he only had about $40 a week to spend on groceries, 20 to 40 with all the deductions, and he was only getting minimum wage. I mean, people are forced to do rotten things in order to survive.
$75, which they paid to the person personally. They never handed that money over to her for wood. She got $75 for water, which paid off her water for 3 months or something like that. And and she made do on $75 a month for food. And when she realized that he was ripping her off, she went and she filed suit against him, and they didn't do nothing. They just upped her money. That was it. Everything was forgotten. But nothing was forgotten in those kids' minds, because we were the ones that had to see through the holes in the roof. We had to feel the cold. We slept in a one-bedroom house. We, half the time, we hardly ever ate when we grew up. It's probably one, so it shall be now. Four.
You know, we really have most Indian people that I know. They have, we tend to eat because we can remember being hungry. I can remember as a child being hungry. And when my sister died, we found upstairs in her sewing room, she had boxes of material and she had a big barrel and it had material in it. And we went through that stuff and we found she had hidden food. Here and there and everywhere, you know, instead of keeping it in the cupboard or the freezer, and she had a freezer, she had canned goods stuffed here and there.
But it's funny, you do stuff like that when you get older, when you think about all the things you start.
Yeah, and we tend to spoil our children too because of being able to
open your
and food is one of the, oh, definitely, it's the most basic things you need, you know. The very basic things that you needed. Like you need certain things before you can think about anything else. Shelter, clothing, and food. And then you can go beyond that and think about something else. Think about, anything
even
extra.
When I used to drink,
these are not luxuries.
The first thing I always did was I paid my rent, bought my food, and I always made sure that my kids had good clothes on their back when they went to school. Those were the, and even though I drank heavy, those were always the first things I thought about, my bills being paid. I don't like owing bills. So I told my husband if he ever dies, he better make sure his bills are paid. I don't want to have to owe no bills. But it's funny because when you come from a home like that, there is a lot of love. There's a lot of love. There's a lot of togetherness. And today, when you see a family that's only got two kids, they're always fighting with each other. They don't know how to get along because they've never been there. They don't know what it's like to starve, or they don't know what it's like to go outside of your home and mingle with the other kids out there. But I think like on the reserve, because it's so close, everybody's close, everybody knows each other, and they're always willing to help. I don't know what it's like on my reserve for that anymore. It used to be at one point when my grandmother was alive that people would just open up the door and walk in, and if they didn't have a place to spend, they'd put their, whatever it is they had would be on the floor, and the next morning they could go in the cupboards and eat, and then just, you know, whatever they had to do, go on with their business the next day. Today, I went back to the reserve 5 years ago, and I had met this woman, and she had told my husband and I, let's go on. You can come over to my place and spend the night. If we're not home, don't worry about walking. Make yourself at home. Have something to eat. And they happened to be home that day, and I knocked on the door because that's what I got used to. In the city, you have to lock the door. On the reserve, you don't lock your door.
Well, it was the same way here. Like, we used to come back to the reserve quite almost every weekend. Like, and when we come to a house, what they had on was a metal thing or a stick against the door. And you know, when they went home and the door is like that, and it would go on to some other place until they come home. You just didn't bother. From the road you could see that stick against the door. And then you know they went home. No, it's different. Quite different now. I think I can sit down and think about all the changes that have been made that at one time too. Every child was your child. You treated every child like they were your own. It's not like that anymore. You don't dare say anything to somebody else's kid.
I do.
I do too.
I haven't gotten over it.
I haven't had any.